You are listening to 93.3 FM WNRB LP Wausau. Free people, free radio. Coming up next, a show the NSA always loves to listen into, and stop tapping my phones. This is The Mike Cannon Show.
Warning. The views expressed on The Mike Cannon Show, or the segments brought to you on this indie media radio show, do not necessarily reflect the views of WNRB nor WNRB's host.
Guess who's back again.
Mike Cannon.
This is my boomstick!
This could be dangerous. You should go back.
I know you're out there. I can feel it now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change.
My friends, how dare General Wesley Clark swift boat my military record?
But Senator, how did he swift boat you? He called you a military hero. All he did was point out that military service does not automatically qualify one to be commander-in-chief. And swift boating, you actually just hired Bud Day, one of the swift boat veterans, as part of your truth squad.
Look, I will not allow any swift boating of my swift boater. Good day!
And now, the only radio commentator not addicted to illegal pain medication, nor Viagra, Mike Cannon.
Welcome back to this week's Indie Media Radio program, The Mike Cannon Show. Each and every week we try to bring you alternative voices from around the country and the world. Voices the six mega corporations that control 90% of all television, newsprint, and radio do not want you to know about. The goal of The Mike Cannon Show is to offer these voices to you. It is obvious, if you ever listen to this show, that media just does not tell you the whole story, or even the truth for that matter. Our goal is to try to change that. I'd like to welcome two stations that started to air parts of my little ditty each week, RadicalRadio.org and KLGR 95.3 FM in Boulder. With all these downloads and kind notes I've been receiving, it has been time for me to evaluate the service to you. I had a comment from a friend that he liked my music a lot and would like to hear more of it. I also had a comment from a conservative friend of mine that a lot of what he hears on my show is a downer to him. He'd like something more cheery. I do try to break up some of the shorter shows with a little bit of fun here or there, like the comedy piece Heads Up. But I find it hard to figure out what to include or what not to include in my show. There's so much good stuff out there. The truth of the matter is that this is a project of love of mine that takes many, many hours to produce. This week in Radical History alone, I can spend up to 5 hours putting together. I'm not complaining. It's just that I feel that all these great shows out there deserve their own time in the light, too, for all the efforts that they put into it. And getting the truth out beyond the big corporate filter is tough. So I dedicate this show to finding good, often great shows. My other hope is to offer this 3 to 4 hour show each week, up for rebroadcast on alternative stations who recognize the great material out there, but don't have the time to put it all together themselves. This show tries to put it all in one place, so even if they don't air my show, they'll know what else is out there. That being said, I'm always open to suggestions. Should I play more music of love, rage, and resistance I put on my show? It would be difficult to find uplifting pieces to place on my show. However, if anyone has any suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. Consider dropping me a line at themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. Cannon is spelled C-A-N-N-O-N. That's all one long run-on word, themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. I'd like to take another moment out of my day here to talk a little more about what you can normally hear on the show. This show is produced for other not-for-profit community and micropower radio use. Some stations air part of my show. Other stations may or may not know what I normally offer. I'd like to mention some of those shows here. The first hour normally always includes a great weekly roundup of news items from the previous week from the great work done at the people at Eat the State. I also try to include two pieces I produced, This Week in Radical History and a shorter This Week Serac Body Count. I like that shorter piece, for I find it very interesting that listeners to the All Hate AM radio talk shows out there know what the score was the previous baseball game the previous night, but could not come probably within 100 of the death toll in Iraq. I also try to include in the first hour Women's E-News information about women's concerns and other short pieces I can fit into the first hour of the show. The second hour always starts out with an LGBT news advocacy magazine called This Way Out. I'll then try to fit in some shorter great material that could not fit in the first hour, like Peak Oil Check-In, Ask Mr. Green, that type of eco-news programming. Also, shorter radio spin and media minutes is included in the first or second hour, depending upon where I could fit it in. The third RO feature this week in Palestine, giving the listeners a chance to hear some news reports produced out of Palestine from a non-Zionist, non-corporate point of view. Also included in the third hour is often World Report, when I can get a hold of it, and or Scooter and his Interside Radio programming, which offers a little humor later in the show. This week's last hour segment will be World Report out of Canada, because it's a good show. I also feel it necessary, especially for us Wisconsin listeners, to hear what Canada is doing and saying, being that they're only a couple hundred miles away from our border, and we probably have more affinity with Canada than we do from people, let's say, like Texas or Florida, for that matter. And often when I air World Report, it is a surprise how much news is about the United States. This week's World Report show talks a lot about U.S. war resisters living in Canada, something never talked about on the Lower 48 media. Again, the corporate-slash-government-influenced media just will not cover that subject. However, it's obviously a mainstay in Canadian news. So that is a typical lineup you get each week on the Mike Cannon Show. Often, unless I have something very spectacular or I have a lot of time on my hands, which is very seldom since it takes quite a long time to produce this show, I will loop the first hour and the fourth hour of my show. So if you're listening on WNRB LP in Wausau, Wisconsin, this week, as in most weeks, you can expect to hear the first hour of the show again repeated on the fourth hour. Again, I am always curious if anyone has any suggestions about how to make the show better. And please feel free to contact me if you do at themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. So let's get back into this week's show. The normal fare, the normal lineup I mentioned earlier that you get to hear this week. I hope you enjoy this little effort to get news the corporations do not cover and to introduce to you nonprofit, often community radio stations at its best. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening.
This Michael Savage and the Savage Nation, this gay marriage in California, it's a threat to real marriage. The gays stealing an institution as fragile as marriage and perverting it. It's mental rape, the raping of our minds of our children by the homosexual mafia. What's going on?
Michael, we cannot have you talking about the homosexual mafia like that. Therefore, we're going to make you an offer you can't refuse. You are going to divorce your wife and marry a gay man.
What?
You heard me. You're going to divorce your wife and marry a homosexual man.
No way! I'm not going to do it! I refuse! I refuse the rape and perversion!
You don't cross the homosexual mafia, Michael. We'll be in touch.
I refuse! I refuse the rape of my mind!
What's this?
The seven head of Clay Aiken! Honey, we's getting divorced and I'm marrying a gay.
Huh?
I'm marrying a gay homosexual, then he's gonna rape and pervert me. I told you never to ask me about my business, Kate.
Sit back, relax, breathe in. Slowly, there you go. Enjoy the Mike Cannon Show.
State, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Got to clear my throat here.
Just don't sing. Just don't sing.
Oh, don't worry.
All right. Starting with
the conversations people miss when we come on the air.
All right. Moving on to national and this week's economic news.
Yeah, the Labor Department issued their report on Thursday about unemployment. And it turns out that after we had record job losses in May, June saw an equal number of job losses nationwide, 62,000, which brings the total for this year to 438,000 for just a half a year. 2007 was pretty bad, too. Looking back at the 2007 statistics, the economy needs to create something like 100,000 new jobs each month for employment to stay stable and to, you know, cover the new entrants to people who are new job seekers in the market. Well, for the second half of last year, only October had a gain of over 100,000 jobs. The other months had much smaller gains, averaging about 55,000 to 60,000 for the second half of the year. So we've been sliding downhill for about a year now, yeah. Which really is a It really supports the notion that we've been in a sliding into a recession since the credit crisis hit.
And for some people, the recession has been there for a long time, since the beginning of the Bush years in 2001, because you look at the overall job creation since the beginning of the Bush years, and it literally, the total for the last 7 years for job creation is less than any one of the years in the mid and late 90s.
It's
really a remarkable contrast.
Yeah, so unemployment-wise, this has been a terrible 8 years. Just last month, the heaviest losses came in construction, and this is in spite of it being the summer construction season. Also, manufacturing and financial services had the heaviest job losses, but there were losses, too, in retailing, and this is in spite of the tax rebate checks that were supposed to help retailers. There were losses in trucking, publishing, and here's the key place, temporary help, which has been doing pretty well in the first part of the year, because as companies lay off permanent workers, they sometimes hire back temporary help at a cheaper cost to them. Well, temporary help is now being laid off as well. So that's a sign that things are starting to get really bad. And then we saw some minor job gains in healthcare, education, the government sector, hotels, bars, and restaurants. And that's because it's not only the travel season, but because of the weak dollar, we're seeing a lot of foreign tourists. So what is this picture? What is this a picture of? To me, in my mind, this is a picture of a third world economy.
I was about to start singing in Brazil, but yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. Anything else on that?
No.
All right. Moving on to the FBI and their new plans. Mr. Parrish, I believe.
No, that was yours, Maria.
Oh, it was. Yeah, the FBI has said that they want to pursue profiling in order to begin investigations in terrorism cases. So they're not even saying that their new policy is something that isn't profiling. They're not even trying to say, look, we're not going to be profiling, et cetera, et cetera. But in fact, they're saying, yes, we think profiling is a good thing. Racial and ethnic profiling is a good thing, and we're going to start using it in order to determine who to open anti-terrorism investigations against.
All right. And a FISA ruling this week.
Yeah, according to federal court in California, this regarding the lawsuit that was launched by a charity in Oregon a couple of years ago that the federal government's been trying to quash at every turn, ruled basically that the federal government's warrantless surveillance program was illegal and unconstitutional, that the president did not have the authority as commander-in-chief to override Congress's approval of the FISA legislation of the created the FISA court in 1978. Now, this is significant, and yet it's not significant. The reason it's significant is that all of the various lawsuits regarding warrantless spying have been consolidated into one set of lawsuits that are being heard under the same judge in California. So that's good, right? Well, no, because on Tuesday this week, Congress, the Senate rather, is poised to consider compromise legislation that the House has already approved that would basically retroactively make all of this legal, as well as providing immunity to the telecom companies and so forth. And this is precisely the legislation that Obama is getting a lot of criticism on now for his compromises around for supporting the administration line on this. So just at the point when the courts have finally gotten around to ruling that this stuff is completely illegal, Congress, under the Democrats, is poised to make it legal again.
All right. And moving on, the major House vote.
Yeah. Coming up this week in the House, as Congress gets back from its July 4th recess, H.R. 362, which is it's a non-binding resolution, but politically it's very important. It's very dangerous. It's basically a resolution that conveys as the sense of Congress that the United States should declare war on Iran. It doesn't exactly say it that way. What it says is that sanctions should be increased and that the administration should pursue an embargo, or rather, a naval blockade, an embargo against Iran. Unfortunately, that is an act of war under international law, and would likely provoke a hostile reaction from Iran. And given that the Bush administration has been saying all along that it does not need congressional approval to launch a war against Iran, the fact that this could be used politically and be waved around by the Bush administration to say, well, we don't need the permission, but see here, it's already the sense of Congress that that we should pursue aggressive policies against Iran, makes this an extraordinarily dangerous vote. It comes up before the House Intelligence Committee this week. Adam Smith from our area, he has a congressional district that stretches from Auburn and Kent in the north all the way down to Lacey. It's basically a suburban district that wraps around South King County and the suburban portions of Pearson, Thurston County. Smith is on that committee, so he in particular is an important congressperson to target on when the office is open on Monday, and if you have a chance to call or email or go down and visit to his office in Tacoma, I would highly encourage people to do so and ask him to oppose this legislation. Incidentally, several Washington state lawmakers are signed on as co-sponsors of this resolution. Dave Reichert on the east side is one, Norm Dix is another one, and then Brian Baird also from Southwest Washington.
All right. Moving on, Seymour Hersh, always writing good content.
Yeah, and he's got, speaking of war with Iran, he has a new story out in the New Yorker that basically claims that the war has already begun. He's been writing for a couple of years that there have been covert operations that the U.S. has launched within the borders of Iran itself. But yeah, what he has reported...
Attacks coming from northern Iraq into Iran.
Not just northern Iraq, also southern Iraq.
Southern Iraq as well now.
Yeah, and using groups at the U.S. has in the past branded as terrorist groups as our allies in this struggle.
So arming them and paying them to make attacks.
Exactly, as well as having our own military within the borders of Iran as well, doing reconnaissance and, you know, paying off dissident groups and sabotage and these kinds of things. Well, according to Hersh, through him, several anonymous sources within military circles and congressional circles, Congress secretly approved last year $400 million to dramatically escalate these covert operations. Now, what's particularly interesting about this story is that in the past, when Hersh has come out with his Iran stories, the White House has vehemently denied them. Of course, they would later turn out to be true, but at the time, the White House would vehemently deny them. They wouldn't bother to deny this one. They basically said, well, we won't comment on that story. So I think you can pretty much take that as an acknowledgement that the war against Iran has already begun, and that Iran actually really would have the right to counterattack at any time if they so choose. So, an extremely dangerous situation brewing with Iran. And I know it's easy to tune this out because we've been talking about it for a couple of years now, and because the Progress for a New American Century folks have been talking about Iran really for the entire decade. But this is something that Bush has said he wants to get done before the end of his administration, and it's a very dangerous time.
He literally wants to go out with a bang.
Yeah.
All right.
Because he hasn't started enough wars already.
I know.
Also out this week, a story from the UK Telegraph.
Yeah, and this is a story that should be headline news in the United States, but once again is not. It's that Dick Cheney in his office tried very, very hard to block Condoleezza Rice and the State Department from helping to negotiate the deal with North Korea that denuclearized that country. In fact, we had a major milestone in that denuclearization where North Korea destroyed its cooling tower this week, and also took through international delegates to see that in fact it no longer had the capacity to enrich uranium. Cheney went so far, in fact, according to the Telegraph story, as to leak the documents that implied that North Korea was supplying Syria with nuclear weapons. Documents that were let's not put too fine a spin on it, probably false. But it did come out of the Cheney office and was, of course, you know, dutifully relayed by media in this country.
I think the media at that point were taking these things with a grain of salt, because when they did published stories on it, my reaction was, oh, this is so obviously an attempt to sabotage the talks going on.
Yeah, but that's
your
reaction.
Yeah.
You follow this stuff closely,
that's
Maria.
True.
Most people don't. So.
That's true, but to me it kind of seemed like the media was sort of kind of going through the paces. when they reported it, rather than saying this is a big story, they were kind of going, well, we kind of have to report this. And I was thinking, you know, this probably came from Cheney's office. So this is great, because this sort of supports my feeling about that.
Yeah, except that it's being reported in the British press. It's not being reported in American press, where people need to pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
And the other thing that happened this week with North Korea is that the State Department delisted North Korea as a terrorist state, which raises an interesting question that if they're delisted because they've abolished their nuclear program, what does that have to do with sponsoring terrorist groups? It doesn't have anything to do with it, which tells you once again that terrorist listings by the State Department, that this is a terrorist state or this is a member of the Axis of Evil or whatever, is a purely political exercise that has very little to do with whether, in fact, a government is actually sponsoring terrorist groups in different parts of the world.
So just having a nuclear program would put you on the terrorism list. Well, Pakistan should be there. India should be there. Israel should be there.
Britain and France should be there.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
We should be there.
Yeah.
We have the biggest terrorist program, and we're the one who's used them.
All right. Moving on to Afghanistan.
Yeah. More U.S. and NATO deaths in Afghanistan than in Iraq for the second straight month. And, in fact, in June, it was not even close. 45 deaths of U.S. or international troops in Afghanistan versus 31 in Iraq. And yet we still see very little coverage of the war in Afghanistan, primarily, I think, because there are more foreign troops and it's a NATO command rather than being a direct U.S. command there. But it tells you that the war in Afghanistan, in part because so many resources have been diverted to Iraq, the war in Afghanistan is going very badly. The Taliban going into a very strategic valley near Kandahar this week. They held it briefly, and they're still very strong there. There's just a lot of strength by the Taliban right now in Afghanistan and in northwest Pakistan, and the Bush administration is doing very little about it because it's obsessed with Iraq.
All right. Speaking of Iraq.
Yeah. Several interesting things this week on Iraq. A May White House report claiming that 15 of the 18 benchmarks that it reported were only about half of them were being met last year. Well, now suddenly 15 out of the 18 benchmarks are, quote, satisfactory. Well, why is this? Well, because they've changed the meaning of satisfactory. It now means that there's some evidence that at some point in the last year there has been some progress toward the benchmarks in some of the... And even the idea that there has been some progress is kind of dubious. For example, one of the benchmarks that was deemed satisfactory was that Iraq passed a law that reintroduced Baathists into the government apparatus. Well, the problem is that law was passed by the Iraqi parliament in January and is still yet to be enforced, and there's no plan for implementing it. And it's still very divisive when Iraq itself. So it exists on paper, but it doesn't actually exist in fact, on the ground. And this is sort of the Tompkins village that's been being built by the White House on a lot of these fronts. Iraq has also announced this week that it has failed to reach a deal with the U.S. oil giants over bringing them back to Iraq. The stumbling block is that the various big oil companies want a percentage of oil revenues for their consulting to the Iraqi government rather than a straight consulting fee. And then... finally, we have four Iraqis having filed suit in the United States against CACI for torture at Abu Ghraib, one of those CACI employees, a Renton man. So that'll be worth following as well.
And finally, torture.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about torture at Abu Ghraib. We also have a huge uproar this week in Mexico over a video in the city of León, which is, I believe, the fourth largest city in Mexico. It's in Guanajuato State, in which a U.S. advisor is teaching torture to the local police. Now, the defense that the police are saying is that, they were being taught torture, including how to implement the torture as a way of withstanding torture if drug gangs happen to capture police officers. And it is true that they're in the midst of a very tough war with a lot of the drug cartels and drug gangs down in Mexico. But there was also an interesting report in the New York Times this week that a lot of the torture that was implemented at Guantanamo and by extension also at Abu Ghraib and Bagram and in the CIA archipelago and Gulag and so forth was was directly lifted from a 1957 military film in which simulation, again, the idea being this is teaching U.S. soldiers how to withstand torture at the hands of what the Chinese communists might do. This in the era, of course, immediately after the Korean War. The idea was, well, this is how the communists tortured their people. And it turns out this was almost verbatim what was used as a template for the torture at Guantanamo. So the idea that we're just teaching people how to withstand torture is a very, very, very slippery slope there, as we've already seen.
All right. Talking, as we do every week, with Job Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both with Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
We can be found online at www.eatthestate.org.
On the same torture subject from the Young's Turks program.
We found out the manual that we were using in Guantanamo Bay and then eventually in Iraq and Abu Ghraib, Afghanistan, that led to all the detainee abuse, otherwise known as torture. It is a 1957 document. Turns out we have found the original source for it. We thought it was from SERE, which is our Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape, that we teach our own soldiers in case they get captured and they're going to get tortured. Well, that is true, but it turns out it comes from somewhere else, to SERE. Where it comes from is a Chinese communist manual on how to torture people. And we got this in 1957 and turned it into a document on how to survive Chinese torture. So we forgot its original origins, and we went down to Guantanamo. In fact, they took the exact document. They removed the title, which was, you know, basically Chinese torture system, and they taught it to the interrogators, to the American interrogators down in Guantanamo Bay, and then it spread, like I said, to Iraq and Afghanistan. We have been torturing people with the ways that we were trying to avoid in the first place from the communist Chinese, the way that they were torturing people. And get a load of this. This is a very, very important twist to it. The point of the Chinese torture was not to elicit correct information. It was to elicit false confessions. They wanted to capture our soldiers, and when they did, they wanted to torture them to the point where they would say America's, you know, terrible and the Chinese are right and we wish the whole world ran on communists. They knew that the American soldiers didn't believe that, or any soldiers that they had captured, but they wanted to devise a torture system that would purposely give them false intelligence or false confessions. That's the system we put in place. And by the way, we did get false intelligence from it. We nearly buried someone alive, and he told us, oh, yeah, yeah, what do you need to know? You want to know that Iraq and 9/11 are connected? Yes, they're connected. Later, we found out that that information was false, but we shouldn't be surprised because we use torture tactics that the Chinese communists use completely to get false information. This is unbelievable and outrageous. And here's the thing. We knew it was torture, but this makes it crystal clear. It is indisputable. We literally took it right from a document that said how you torture people, and it was written originally by the Chinese, who, again, let me repeat for the eighth time, were communists. So it's become circular, where we've come around and become the things that we despise. We've become our worst enemies. I mean, and now, how can the Republicans, knowing where this document came from, possibly still deny that we torture people? But they will. And the Rush Limbaughs of the world will say, oh, it was just a bunch of frat boy pranks and no big deal.
Hey there, sexy. Have you come to play? That's right, big boy. Enjoy the Mike Cannon Show.
Well, I'm very happy to be back in my own backyard in Middleton, Wisconsin, after a tough week of fighting the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. This has been a long, hard battle that I started in late 2005 when we heard about the President's illegal wiretapping program. As we mounted a challenge this week that almost nobody thought could work, we did stop this thing for now. It is delayed till after the July 4th weekend. I teased some of my colleagues. I said, we can celebrate the Constitution on July 4th, and maybe when you come back, you'll decide not to tear it up. This is what's going on here. This is a terrible piece of legislation. It's got two major problems. One is very well known. The retroactive immunity for telephone companies who may not have actually followed the law, instead just complying potentially with the government and giving up our private information against the statutes, this should be handled in a court of law. We should not just give them immunity. It's a terrible precedent for the rule of law and very unfair. But even worse, is the fact that this bill gives enormous power to the government to suck up all of our international communications, emails, text messages, phone calls, to kids overseas, to soldiers, to reporters, to business associates. It's unprecedented. With no court review, it's a huge giveaway. No senator, and especially no Democrat, should be voting for this legislation. So when we come back on the Tuesday after July 4th, we will have votes on several amendments, including, very importantly, a chance to strike the immunity for the telephone companies, as well as a chance to stand up and be heard in opposing this overall legislation.
This is 93.3 WNRB LP Wausau. Free people, free radio.
He has promised a special comment on FISA and the junior senator from Illinois. The Democratic leadership in the Senate, Republican knuckle-dragging in the same chamber, and the mediocre skills of whoever wrote the final version of the FISA bill have combined to give Senator Barack Obama a second chance to make a first impression. And he damned well better take it. The Senate vote on this tortured and reckless piece of legislation has now been postponed until after the 4th of July break. The Democrats, completing their FISA experience, a collective impression of Homer Simpson falling off a cliff and hitting every bramble and rock on the way down, didn't exactly plan this fortuitous delay. Last week, the vote on their cave-in was imminent. But while arguing over a piece of housing legislation about how many mortgage lenders can dance on the head of a pin, Republicans dithered so long about protecting their constituents, the banks, that the Senate calendar got backed up. This, in turn, gave Senator Majority Leader Harry Reid some time to think. There was one among his group, chosen to run for president, who had loudly assailed the idea of handing a get-out-of-jail-free card to corporations, who had approached definitional fascism by breaking the law in concert with the Bush administration. But this senator had suddenly realized that to the large group of voters who operate with an information base that would make Cliff's notes look like the encyclopedia, if in the final vote he stood against FISA, he would hand them a rock with which they could hit him over the head, a rock wrapped up in a piece of paper reading, Obama voted thing terror stop. Thus, Senator Obama was born your first second chance. Senator Reid was kind enough to help you out by composing an amendment that would keep FISA, which you rightly endorse, but strips out the telecom immunity, which you rightly oppose. It's a protest, a decidedly lame one, but in our daily world of political transactions, voting for the amendment when it has no chance of passing and has been in essence constructed as pure Obama CYA, that is a petty crime. Whether it will do more harm to your premise of new politics than to your credibility as an immunity opponent is for you, Senator, to assess and live with. It would be sweet to have a pure politics-free president, but the last of those retired from office in 1797. And while we've all quoted the farewell address of the father of our nation for 211 years now, nobody seems to want to remember that its point was to urge his children that whatever you do, for God's sake, don't form political parties because someday they will kill you. Anyway, Senator, your problem here is not the backlash about the telecom immunity, and it isn't really about your political fluidity on the FISA bill. Your problem is what happens even if this plays out according to plan next week. One, you vote for the anti-immunity amendment. Two, the anti-immunity amendment fails. Three, you vote for the FISA legislation. And four, the FISA legislation passes. Oh, and five, Senator, the Republicans still run against you with the elections for dummies message, Obama voted thing terror stop. Because inside that obscenity that was Charlie Black's comment about how a terrorist attack in this country would be good, good for his boy McCain's chances for election, inside the inhuman calculation that Benazir Bhutto did not die in vain, she helped McCain in the New Hampshire primary, inside all that there is a sad and cynical reality. The Republicans can scare some of the people all the time, and they can scare all the people some of the time. This is all they are right now. Nobody ever said it better than did Aaron Sorkin in his script for the movie The American President. Whatever your particular problem is, friend, I promise you Bob Rumson, and for Bob Rumson, read John McCain, Bob Rumson is not the least bit interested in solving it. He is interested in two things and two things only, making you afraid of it and telling you who's to blame for it. Republicans, with almost no exceptions, have no true credibility on counterterrorism, no track record of prevention or amelioration, and their president cannot even remember the name of the skyscraper he claims to have saved in Los Angeles. And yet somehow the Republicans have managed to convince the public that it doesn't matter that Mr. Bush had already completed 22% of his first term when he his administration, and his party failed so catastrophically on 9/11. The president and party who were at fault were magically transformed into the president and party who would never let it happen again. An unjust, repellent, nefarious trick. But politically, rather a neat trick. Senator, the Republicans are going to paint you as soft on terror no matter how you vote on FISA, or how you vote on the Telecom Immunity Amendment, or on the next farm bill. Last week it was Grover Norquist calling you John Kerry with a tan. By November 1st, it'll be Dick Cheney calling you Osama bin Laden with a tan. When you announced your support of the latest FISA bill, with or without the telecom immunity, the Republicans actually raced to get out a press release accusing you of flip-flopping. You shared the exact same position on which they are running their entire campaign, and they criticized you anyway. So, Senator, from their point of view, they think they've got you boxed in. Vote for FISA, and you've contradicted yourself. Vote against FISA, and it's Obama-voted thing, terror stop. Vote for FISA and against immunity and its political expediency, and Democrats soft on terror, and Obama voted a thing, terror stop. This is a problem, Senator, because flatly, of all the measures that can be taken to aid our damaged nation and our devalued Constitution, the first, if not the foremost, is not blocking telecom immunity, but rather making sure no Republican is in the White House past noon next January 20th. Of all the remedial efforts against the Bush administration's high crimes and misdemeanors, and of all the prophylactic steps against further inroads against the freedoms of the citizens of this nation and the rights of everyone else in the world, the primary step must still come to us through the prism of politics.
That was Keith Overland had to say about Obama and his flip-flopping on the FISA bill. Up next, a short piece by the Young Turk Show on Obama's flip-flopping on his promises on Iraq. Looks like another Democrat is going to pull a Clinton, don't it? Yeah, your vote really matters. Things are really going to be different now.
Give these people a voting day every year so that they'll have the illusion of meaningless choice. Meaningless choice that we go like slaves and say, "Joy, I voted."
The Obama camp also gave a little hint of something to come that is dangerous, okay? And in fact, it's about to prove Sam Brownback right. Remember Sam Brownback, Republican senator from Kansas, came out at the end of last week and said, "I'm going to put a marker down." He said, Obama's a flip-flopper. He flip-flopped on FISA, public financing, this, that, and the other thing, NAFTA, and he explained it all. And he made a pretty good case, to be quite honest. And then he said, "I'm going to put a marker down. I bet he flip-flops on Iraq." I thought, wow, he's coming out strong, man. Iraq is a central issue. Obama can't flip-flop on that. But in the midst of talking to Huffington Post, Obama camp said, "Hey, now remember, we're not for an immediate withdrawal from Iraq. We're for a gradual withdrawal from Iraq." Uh-oh. SpaghettiOs. What is that? That is a clear signal we're about to change on Iraq. And all of a sudden, and it's a matter of emphasis. Did he ever say that he was for immediate withdrawal? He didn't. Okay, they're right about that, right? But he did say 16 months. He better not move off of that. Now, once he gets into office, am I going to be like, "It's 16 months and 2 weeks. You know, oh, I'm so angry with you." No. But in the middle of the campaign, it's terrible politics to flip-flop on such a central issue. Don't do it! Don't move off that 16-month limit that you set in the primaries. Now if he comes out and says, "Oh, did we say withdrawal?" "We didn't mean withdrawal. We meant really gradual withdrawal." If you do that, man, you will have screwed the pooch. I mean, I can't begin to tell you what a bad idea that is. And they're putting out the smoke signals here. Fanning that smoke, saying, "We didn't say immediate withdrawal from Iraq. We said gradual withdrawal." Man, if you prove Senator Brownback right, and you wind up doing a little, you know, massaging of your position on Iraq, you want to talk about hurting the brand. Dude, everybody will think you're a slimy politician just like the rest of them. This whole idea of change that we can believe in and audacity of hope, you're going to flush it down the toilet if you do that. And I'm not even talking about policy, because once you get into office, if you have to make some adjustments, I'm not an unreasonable guy on Iraq, right? I hope I'm not an unreasonable guy on any of these issues. But if you do it in the middle of the election, they're going to do exactly what they did to Senator Kerry on you. They're going to do exactly what they did to Al Gore on you. They're going to call you a flip-flopper and weak, because you will be a flip-flopper and you will be weak. I'm trying to get out ahead of it because I see the signals here, because they're the ones, the Obama camp is the ones putting it out. And I'm telling you right now, as a friend,
like we did during the Iraq War, like the French did with us during the Iraq War. As a friend, don't do it. It's a bad idea. And then we lashed out at them, and then later, the guy who changed French fries to freedom fries in the house was like, I'm so sorry to the French. You were right. And we should have seen that we shouldn't have picked that fight. And as a friend, I'm telling you, Obama camp, don't do it. It's a bad idea, and you'll really screw up your whole image if you in any way flip-flop or begin to get soft on your position on Iraq. Bad idea politically. I mean, can I say it any clearer? Can I say it any stronger?
You are listening to a radio. Because of the time it takes for radio to travel to Earth from distant sources, radio astronomers are able to see the universe as it appeared more than 10 billion years ago. The artificial radio broadcast you are listening to now portrays the universe as it was just 1 second ago. Stay current. Listen to the Mike Cannon Show.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without. What do all men with power want? More power.
Now they knew who was master and leader. Sheep, thought I.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Remorse for what? You people have done everything in the world to me. Doesn't that give me equal right? I can do anything I want to you people at any time I want to, because that's what you've done to me. If you spit in my face and smack me in the mouth and throw me in solitary confinement for nothing, what do you think's going to happen when I get out of here? What I haven't done enough, I might be ashamed of that for not doing enough. Maybe I should have killed 400 or 500 people, then I would have felt better. Then I felt like I really offered society something. You've got it stuck in your brain that I'm not gonna be like, what do you want to call me a murderer for? I don't pretend as a person or anything fancy. I can, but I find more real in the world that I'm in than I do the tinsel. And the real world is the one I have to deal with every day. Believe me, if I started murdering people, there could never be left.
Chemical weapons threat. Terrorists, dangerous, die.
There are some who feel like if, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
As of Monday, July 7th, 2008. 4,114. United States military personnel have died in Iraq since the start of the invasion.
Join us or die.
According to the British medical journal Lancet, over 100,000 Iraqi civilians had died since the start of the invasion.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
What do you see when you're in the dark and the demons come?
Gonna rise up, take what's there. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution.
This week in Radical History for the week of July 7th. Inspiration came from the Slingshot organizer, some audio is borrowed from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York, and more radical info can be found at the Daily Bleed website.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes.
This week in radical history, starting July 7th. On this day in 1535, Sir Thomas More, a humanist and author of Utopia, after refusing to acknowledge the King of England as the head of the church, loses his to the king's axeman. Also on July 7th, 1846, The colonial power in the new world known as America declares war on Mexico and steals California and parts that would be known as Texas. Also on July 7, 1865, Mary Stuart will be the first woman hung in America as her and four others are tried and convicted of being conspirators in the Lincoln assassination. Back and to the left. Also on July 7, 1892, in the land of free speech, the song, A Man Named Carnegie, appears during the Homestead Strike. It is during this strike that anarchist Henry Bayer is arrested and sent to prison for 5 years for distributing leaflets. Also on July 7, 1903, in Kennington, Pennsylvania, 27,000 workers abused by their employers go on strike, and the child textile workers protest in what is called the March of the Mill Children. All are malnourished, many missing fingers all the way up to the knuckles. The strikers march in the factory owners' neighborhoods. In one of the newspapers, it is quoted about the strike saying, I called upon the millionaire manufacturers to cease their moral murders, and I cried to the officials to open their windows opposite. Someday the workers will take possession of your city hall, and when they do, no children will be sacrificed on the altar of profit. Labor organizer Mary Harris Mother Jones leads the children from Philly to the summer home of President Roosevelt, who refuses to meet with them. Also on a state in 1923 in France, the Paris Dental Museum of M. Wangrum is bombed by neo-nihilists. Quoting the nihilist, once bitten, always fearful. Also on July 7, 1947, Roswell crash occurs. Government reports that it is a flying saucer that crashed. Then a day later, nah, it was only a weather balloon. Also on July 7, 1966, after the Tompkins incident and later proven in Pentagon Papers that it was a CIA-created lie, governors meet and vote 49-1 to back LGB's plan of a full-scale war in Vietnam. In 1972 Ireland, Bloody Friday, IRA bombs and kills 9 in Belfast. Also on July 7, 1979, 2,000 Indian activists and anti-nuclear demonstrators marched through the Black Hills of South Dakota to protest the development of uranium mines in their sacred lands. In the summer of 1987, after right-wing favorite Lieutenant Colonel Ali Noor's testimony captivates the nation during Iran-Contra hearings, it was revealed that he was ordered by the Reagan administration and then CIA chief former President George Bush Sr. to sell arms for hostages, directly going against a resolution passed in Congress. Don't worry, like all right-wing criminals, he'd be pardoned by the president the next Christmas. Also on July 7, 2001, Amnesty International says China has executed 1,781 in the last 3 months, yet they somehow win the bid for the Olympics that is playing this year. This week in radical history for July 8, 1520, in the New World, Battle of Atampan in Mexico. It wasn't really a battle, but more like a massacre as the Spaniards slay over 20,000 Aztecs. Also on July 8, 1932, depression hits its low point as the Dow Jones Industrial Average drops to 41.22. How low will it go this time? Don't worry, the capitalists have their way of making money. Also on July 8, 1945, 8 German POWs shot to death and 20 wounded in Salina, Utah, when prison guard Private Clarence Pertusi sprays a tent on a sleeping prisoners with machine gun fire. Don't worry, like Abu Ghraib, Camp Gitmo, Mailai, Fallujah, and Haditha, the military is good at covering its butts and protecting its soldiers, even when they commit war crimes. Lastly, for July 8, 1980, Congress never passes on an opportunity to screw Native Americans as they enact the Hopi Navajo Forced Relocation Act to, quote, solve, unquote, the problem of impending access to coal deposits in Big Mountain, Arizona. Navajo families at Big Mountain continue their resistance to this day. This week in radical history for July 9, 1917, when Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman are charged with conspiracy to defeat military registration under the conscription law, they are sentenced today to serve 2 years in prison, pay fines of $10,000 each, and quietly deported to Russia at the expiration of their prison terms. U.S. Marshal McCarthy says, this marks the beginning of the end of anarchism in New York. Also on July 9, 1945, 3 black members of the U.S. Women's Army Corps Reserve are beaten in Elizabethtown, Kentucky bus terminal for sitting in the white section when the black section is full. The policemen involved are, of course, acquitted. Also on the date July 9, 1955, the Russell-Einstein Manifesto on Danger of Nuclear War is published in London. Bertrude Russell and Albert Einstein and 7 other prominent scientists warn of nuclear war could, quote, put an end to the human race, unquote. Einstein would later say, only 2 things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity, and I'm not sure about the former. Also on July 9, 1958, in Lebanon, USA invades with 14,000 troops and armed with nuclear-capable rockets to, quote, protect American interests, unquote. Also on that date, 1987, in Korea, 1 million South Koreans demonstrate against a pro-U.S. South Korean regime. On this day in radical history for July 10, 1894, 14,000 federal and state troops finally succeed in putting down a labor strike against the Pullman Place Car Company, which had been a peaceful strike until July 7th, when the federal troops intervened on the side of industrialists in Chicago. During the Pullman strike, federal troops killed 34 American Railway Union members. Also on July 10, 1962, peace-loving American government rejects Soviet's proposal to complete and general disarmament of nuclear weapons. This is one of only many similar attempts by Russia to defuse the armament race that is rejected by the U.S. throughout the 50s and 60s.
This is your radio reporter, Hannah George. On this day, July 10th in 1966, 2 years before his assassination, Martin Luther King Jr. was leading the Chicago Freedom Movement against the city's segregated slums. This was the first time that King and the SCLC had tackled desegregation issues in the North, and to their surprise, it proved to be a more hostile battleground than the outright racism of the South. King's experience in Chicago caused him to reshape his views on American capitalism and the process of change. When King was later criticized for involving himself in the anti-Vietnam War movement and the Poor People's Campaign in America, he argued that there was a direct relationship between poverty and racism and American militarism and imperialism.
Also on July 10, 1976, KKK members near Georgetown, Illinois, gather for a friendly neighborhood cross burning. The meeting got off on the wrong foot. They went to plant the cross, only to find it was too heavy to move. It took the white-robed merrymakers 3 hours to chop the cross down to a portable size. Then they planted it, only to find it would not light. Finally, they gave up and went home, somewhat crossed. Two more items on July 10th, 1895 in New Zealand. French secret police blow up the Greenpeace Rainbow Warrior anti-nuclear vessel in Ockham Harbor, killing one activist. State terrorism at its finest. Lastly, for July 10, 2007, the former head of the State Food and Drug Administration in China is executed. Better bring a sack lunch if you're going to China for the Olympic Games. This day in radical history for July 11th, 1869, Buffalo Bill Cody and scouts attacked the Tall Bulls camp, killing 51 Cheyenne and capturing 17 women and children. Also on July 11th, 1947, 8 black prisoners killed at Brunswick, Georgia for refusing to work in snake-infested swamps without boots.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Hannah George. On this day, July 11th in 1954, the first known chapter of the White Citizens Council was formed in Indianola, Mississippi, and within a few months had spread to the rest of the Deep South. The White Citizens Council had white supremacist beliefs similar to that of the KKK, but they used economic pressure and political tactics rather than direct violence in order to oppress people of color. The council was often referred to as an uptown clan, as many members were in positions of power. Its successor organization, the Council of Conservative Citizens, is still actively promoting many of the same racist principles today. And some people argue that America's racist legacy is in the past.
Also on July 11, 1955, Congress, wanting to show how much different they are than the godless commies, order all American currency to state, "In God We Trust." Lastly, for July 11, 1988, South Korea, police arrest 15,617 demonstrators demonstrated against the South Korean government. This day in radical history for July 12, 1892, state militia moved to break the 12-day labor strike against the Carnegie Steel Corporation in Homestead, Pennsylvania. Strikers protesting wage cuts of 18-26% suffer 7 deaths in the attacks by the Pinkerton Private Police Force of Carnegie Steel Company. Hey, but look, Carnegie was kind enough to donate all that money in the great Carnegie Hall, all off the backs of the workers. Also on July 12, 1917, final days of the vigilantes deport the striking mill workers in Bisbee, Arizona. Yesterday, authorities sealed off the county, seized the local Western Union Telegraph office in order to cut outside communication, and several thousand armed vigilantes rounded up 1,186 miners of the Industrial Workers of the World, IWW, and began herding them into manure-laden boxcars to be shipped off and dumped in the New Mexico desert. Also on July 12, 1951, Adlai Stevenson calls up the National Guard to stop the rioting in Socorro, Illinois. A mob of 3,500 tries to keep an African-American family from moving into the city. People, the time has
come. This is your Radio Roots reporter, Hannah George. On this day, July 12th in 1967, tension between whites and blacks in Newark, New Jersey exploded into 6 days of rioting when the police arrested and beat a black cab driver named John Smith. The rioting left 23 people dead and thousands of other were injured or arrested. Although Newark had quickly become one of the first major cities to have a majority black population, political power remained in the control of whites. The black community was plagued by police brutality, unemployment, poor housing conditions, and poverty. After the riots, much of Newark's white population left the city and poverty continued to plague Newark's black community. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Also on July 12, 1996, two Ontario men are beaten and dragged in San Antonio, Texas by police who think they are gay. This week in radical history for July 13th, one item in 1991, Chicago police chief calls for the suspension of constitutional rights so police can fight crime while praising the low crime rate of Nazi Germany. This has been This Week in Radical History. Welcome to more stations at a pickup and a little ditty, radicalradio.org, and KLGR 95.3 FM in Boulder. Inspiration for This Week in Radical History came from the Slingshot organizer. Google the Slingshot Collective for more information. Much of the radical info presented on the show can be found at the Daily Bleed website. Google the Daily Bleed for more radical info. Special thanks to the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York for the audio I used in this show. This has been This Week in Radical History, produced out of the Glee Glee Studios. A reminder of what anarchist and feminist Emma Goldman once said, if voting ever really changed anything, they would have made it illegal. So until next week, as always, I'm yours in the struggle, Mike Cannon.
Give these people a voting day every year so that they'll have the illusion of meaningless choice. Meaningless choice that we go like slaves and say, oh, I voted. Entertained for a minute that powerful people might get together and have a plan. Doesn't happen. You're a kook. You're a conspiracy buff. Who, you know, the only way you cure that, death, bloodshed. I don't advocate it, but I see that it's really the only answer.
What have we done? What have we done? Are we making it? Or just having fun? What have we done? What have we done? Is this more than just music? Is it more than just a club? Are we making any difference? Oh, what have we done? What have we done? What have we done? Well, just take a look around, and I'm sure that you'll agree that we've done a lot of things to improve community, like organizing protests and serving food, not bombs, sending books to all the prisoners that have been locked up for so long. Throwing bricks through all the windows of the evil corporate shops, supporting mom and pop and standing up to the murdering racist cops. Seems like we're always talking about things we do wrong, but let's not forget to talk about the good things that we've done. Well, no, we've got our faults, and I must say that I agree, but punk rock music saved my life. I can sing it honestly. Sometimes it may seem like we haven't done anything, but I think that we made it a little bit better than it was. That's why I sing, and I'll ask you to sing with me.
Up the punks, up the punks, up the punks. Up the punks, up the punks, up the punks. Up the punks, up the punks, up the punks. Up the punks, up the punks, up the punks.
And now, the only radio commentator not addicted to illegal pain medication, nor Viagra, Mike Cannon.
The Mike Cannon Show, normally heard Mondays from 2 to 6.
My thanks to Mike Cannon at WNRB in Wausau, Wisconsin, who rebroadcast World Report. Welcome to Media Minutes.
Welcome to the weekly radio spin, a look at the stories behind the news, brought to you by the Center.
Peak Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of cheap oil.
Women's E-News, weekly summary of news about women, women's issues, and from women's perspectives. From the weekly Cheers...
This week in radical history for the week of April 7th.
My name is Scooter, and this is the Inner Side Radio Program.
This week in Palestine, the service of the International Middle East Media Center, IMEC.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out on WNRB, Wausau, Wisconsin.
All these programs and more can be heard each week on the Mike Cannon Indie Media Radio Show, normally heard every Monday from 2 to 6 p.m., right here on Central Wisconsin's only non-corporate, commercial-free community radio station, 93.3 WNRB LP, Wausau. Free people, free radio.
Thank you. And now the winner of the best Central Wisconsin community radio station as voted by us computer voices, WNRB.